That's Saturday, April 13th, 2024, Bayagiri Monastery. And tomorrow, Sunday, we'll have a big ordination, and also our, just previous to that, our Songkran ceremony. And it's really nice to see everybody coming together. And post-winter retreat, it just seems to be the same every year. It's very, very quiet right after the winter retreat, and then it kind of builds up again with Thai New Year. And I always tend to get the feeling with bhikkhu ordination that we're just surrounded by blessings, and with our own practice, then we generate blessings. And when we practice and we attempt to keep sila, keep precepts, develop virtue, develop good conduct of body and speech, and ultimately of mind, that generates blessings. And we can reflect on what do the arhants teach, what do the great meditation masters teach, and they teach just very basic things to be kind, be very forgiving with each other. Is the message that Longpo Liam had written out for Maga Puja. Is one of the main part of the message was we all have to be very forgiving with each other. So that's what Longpo Liam teaches. That's what Longpo Cha taught. When Venerable Kitty Sorrow was going to disrobe, he decided he wanted to disrobe with Longpo Liam in Thailand. And he was quite concerned that Longpo Liam was going to give him a hard time about it. So he was he's a bit nervous, concerned. Went to Longpo Liam to disrobe, thinking that would be the best way to do it, and the most beautiful way to do it. And Longpo Liam was just very, very kind with him, very metta with him through the whole disrobing process. And, you know, because some people had high hopes for Venerable Kitty Sorrow. Maybe he was going to be an abbot of a monastery, or, you know, he's a good monk. And so thought, well, people are going to be disappointed. People are going to be let down. But Longpo Liam was just very kind and very warm, very friendly. They went through the ceremony. He was giving him encouragement, wishing him well. And then, why was he so nice to me? So he just asked, like, well, I thought maybe you were going to give me a hard time or tell me off or something, but you were just so kind to me, so nice to me. And Longpo Liam said, yeah, Longpo Cha taught us we're supposed to be nice to each other. So that's how I treat people. So it's just a very basic, but it's something that's easy to forget. We're actually supposed to be nice to each other. Yeah. If we can do that, then everything's okay. Yeah, so just we can make that our practice. And sometimes it's hard. I mean, I've seen it where, I've seen it many times, actually, and it happened even in the suttas. It just seems to be something that happens where we can get some sort of nitpicky thing happening in the mind. And I've seen it with myself. I've seen it with monks, get enraged at another monk over the smallest thing. The smallest thing. The way the monk sitting next to you is eating lettuce. That's a real example. just something somebody said, or, and it just can seem so real. And it's just an illusion. It's just a trick of the mind. It's a trick of delusion. So, and we have to be very forgiving with each other when that kind of thing does come up. So we have to remember, okay, that kind of thing is coming up, but that's the training, that's the practice also. So the training actually brings these things up. So when these things get brought up, living in the monastery brings these things up. Being in positions of responsibility brings these things up. Before I was an abbot, I thought, I'm not suffering very much. And then I realized, oh, wait, I still have a lot of suffering to do. It brought it up. So to those positions of responsibility highlighted some things that delusion as a way of pushing things off to the side, and we don't want to look at them. So when the shadow side comes out, that's not necessarily a bad thing, and we need to look at it, try to not act on it too much, and then be very forgiving with ourselves when it comes up for us, and be very forgiving with others when it comes up for others. You know, and this is the reason we have the precepts. We're not going to go too far, wander. There's a boundary that we're not going to wander outside of. If some difficult mental states are coming up, then we have the boundary of the precepts to really keep us safe. It's like a safety net for us. So those precepts of body and speech, even if the mind is going wild, then they can protect us. So with something like a bhikkhu ordination that's happening tomorrow, going from 10 precepts to 227 precepts. So we've got the Anagarikas with 8 precepts, novices with 10 precepts, bhikkhus with 227 precepts. But really it's the 10 precepts, and that is the spirit of the training. So 227 precepts, it's different in the way that there's a lot of precepts around mindfulness with our requisites, mindfulness with robes, mindfulness with food. 30 of those 227 precepts are around how we eat. So minor protocols around not tossing food up in the air and catching it in our mouth, or just not sticking our whole hand in our mouth, not licking the hands, not licking the lips, not talking while you're eating. So there's some that do come up. Not talking while you're eating, not making loud smacking noises while you're eating, not making loud slurping noises while you're eating. These are all some of the 227 precepts. There's precepts around teaching Dhamma. There's precepts around not keeping too much robe cloth, having too much stuff. So keeping things down to a minimum. There's precepts around not trying to get monks to fall into other precepts, kind of as a perverse joke. There's precepts around not getting monks to worry about if they've fallen into a precept or fallen into an offense. So there's a precept around respect. So there's a lot of precepts. These are around a finer training of body, speech, and mind. Beautiful conduct. Very, very beautiful conduct. This Pachitya 54, disrespect is to be confessed. If one really keeps that precept in all of its permutations, there's the precept and then there's the derived offenses from that precept. So disrespect is to be confessed. That's when another monk points something out to us and we tell them, well, I'm not going to do that. Or we react with some sort of disdain or irritation rather than just being able to take the pointing out of a fault, even if they're wrong. So even if they're wrong, it's still an offense for us to show disrespect. So even if somebody pointing something out to us really has misunderstood and is really wrong about it, even then, if we react with anger or disdain, then we fall into that offense. So I find that it highlights many very interesting principles of Dhamma, that humility. So to be able to not just react, but reflect. So we reflect before we react. That's what that precept is pointing to. And then there's a derived offense under that Pachitya 54 that even if a lay person points something out to us, so for all of you who've been waiting to maybe point something out, even if a lay person points something out to us, even if they're wrong and have no idea what they're talking about, even then, if I was to say, well, you have no idea what you're talking about. You're not ordained. Even that would be a dukkata, would be a lesser offense would be what's called a derived offense under that rule. So dukkha means unbeautiful, inappropriate. That's the lowest class of offense, or the lightest offense. But still, so if you look at just that one rule, to keep that rule completely and not fall into even any of the derived offenses under it, one has to develop this incredible humility, actually, in order to do that. So I find this to be a great blessing, the discipline, the Vinaya. Being able to have the Vinaya, hold the Vinaya, is a great blessing. It brings blessings to ourselves and brings blessings to the world, because just people holding to beautiful conduct, inspiring conduct, can inspire others to have good conduct themselves. So it has a widening circles of influence there. If we see in the news, there's a lot of scary things happening in the world. There's wars that are always happening. There's things that are awful that are happening out in the world. If we watch the news, this phrase came up into my mind during the meditation, the news feed. Like we're feeding on it. Like the news feed. So however often we feed on this, the mind might get quite negative and even fearful, or have a sense of hopelessness or a depressed feeling at seeing all of these things happening in the world. And so we might feel like, well, we don't feel joy because all these awful things are happening in the world. If I was to feel joy, or if I was to feel contentment right now, maybe I might feel guilty that I'm not properly paying attention to, and feeling a sense of discontent over the injustices that are happening currently right now in the world, around the world. So sometimes we can habitually block ourselves from feeling joy or contentment. And yet the natural result of keeping precepts, the natural result of practice, is joy and contentment. The natural result of cultivating wholesome mental states through meditation and through generosity, through service, through letting go, is joy and contentment. It's natural that we're going to experience those things. And it's okay to let ourselves experience those things, you know, despite all these things that are happening in the world. I think if we train ourselves with precepts, with meditation, the discernment, letting go, that's going to have a widening circle effect on other people. I think more so than getting upset about what's happening in the world. So I think it's a blessing to be able to, for us in the monastery, live in the monastery, for us who have taken robes, it's a blessing that we can help ourselves. We can look at our own greed, our own anger, our own delusion, work with it, work with our own shadow side that's going to come out from time to time. It's just inevitable. Work with our own character, develop ourselves, and then through that, create beautiful examples that other people can follow and ultimately do themselves. Not that everybody needs to ordain or even should ordain, but it's that most of us, the huge majority of us, can't help the world directly. We don't have maybe the right connections, or we can't really go and help people in war zones or in difficult situations directly. But we can help ourselves, and through that, we can help others. So it's like the story of Frying Pan, and Debbie likes to tell when the rare times that she gives Dhamma talks. It's the acrobat. And it's there's an elder acrobat and a younger acrobat. And then they do a stick trick, a stick dance, where like the older one holds the stick and then the younger one balances on top of the stick. And they do an act using this pole. And so the older acrobat tells the younger one, you know, I'll look after you, you look after me, and by that we'll do our act, and we'll succeed in it, and we'll get a reward. And the younger one says, no, I'll look after myself, and you look after yourself, and by that we'll succeed in doing the act, and we'll get a reward. And the Buddha says, what the younger one says is more correct, is correct in terms of Dhamma. If we look after ourselves, we don't have to go out looking after others. If we look after ourselves and others look after themselves, then we can live together. So if we're all looking after ourselves, then we can accomplish great things. And this is in stark contrast with the bhikkhus in Kosambi. So this is an example of a huge split happening in the Sangha over a minor toilet protocol. And it was that it became a huge deal. And even the Buddha going to them and saying, you know, this is just a minor protocol. It's not worth arguing over. You know, both sides had, they were correct in their own way. And the Buddha said, this minor protocol is not worth getting all worked up over. So that you saw the Buddha's very realistic in the way he held things. So based on, as it says in the suttas, this, what was it, like a water dipper? The water jar wasn't refilled afterwards or something like that? Or the water dipper was left in the jar, not out of it or something? I can't remember exactly. Something about the water dipper and the water in the toilet room. It wasn't quite correct. And then the Vinaya master said it wasn't correct. And the Dhamma master said that, I think he kind of said he didn't realize it or something. And then somehow the students of the Dhamma master and the Vinaya master got in a big argument. And then they got to the point where in the suttas it says they were stabbing each other with verbal daggers. And so the Buddha tries to get involved, and then they still won't listen to the Buddha. They say they're going to work it out themselves. So the Buddha leaves to go on retreat, and then the lay people are uninspired, lose confidence in these bhikkhus, and so they stop giving them alms food, and ultimately that causes them to mend their ways. So those bhikkhus at Kosambi, they forgot about having forgiveness for each other, just that standard of being unburdensome with each other and being nice to each other. So if you can remember these basic things, then everything will be okay. It's not to say that sometimes there are things that come up where they need to be pointed out, or standards of conduct that get compromised that need to be pointed out, but we can do it in a way of kindness rather than stabbing each other with verbal daggers. So that's not going to be necessary. There's a story I read recently for those of us who are inclined to want to try to do some good in the world, it was about the earth treasure vases and planting earth treasure vases in different places around the world in order to try to bring blessings to different areas that have either been greatly polluted or sacred areas in the world, all over the world, or areas where there have been great conflict. So some of these earth treasure vases were taken to Liberia, and they had just had a 13-year civil war, really horrific, and apparently the war was ended by a nonviolent peace movement initiated by hundreds of women who decided to walk out and face an army of soldiers. And they walked in front of the soldiers before the soldiers were able to attack their village. And they they were singing like childhood songs. And then through that, this general who was heading up a lot of the attacks in the war had a change of heart and ended up becoming a meditation practitioner. And a lot of this war was being fought. This particular general he wanted to get revenge from another guy who had killed his whole family. So he's like, of course, that unforgivable. He killed his whole family, and he's fighting this war and killing many, many people in order to try to get to this guy and take him out. And this other guy had fled the country because he was really, really terrified of this particular general. And so he has a complete change of heart, and the war ends. These singing women ended the 13-year civil war with that act of nonviolence. And then he becomes a practitioner and actually practiced with Thich Nhat Hanh and did a number of very difficult 3-month retreats where he had to face up to all of his karma from everything he did as a general. And he ends up becoming a big spokesperson in this peace movement. And this is all this is pretty recent. This is all fairly recent stuff, recent stories. And he decides, he gets to a point in his meditation where he decides he's completely let go of what this other man did to his family. And he completely forgives him, and then he wants to meet him in person and forgive him in person. And so he tries to, he contacts this guy, and the guy doesn't believe him because everybody thinks this guy is still this horrible killer, and they don't know he's had a complete turnaround, a complete change of heart. And but then the guy takes a chance, and they meet up in where they've planted one of these earth treasure vases in Liberia, and they build a peace hut over it. So they meet in the peace hut where there can be no violence. And sure enough, he says, I forgive you for killing my family, and I really mean it, and I want to make amends, and I don't hold this against you. And then the other guy breaks down, starts crying, and says, you know, I didn't have anything personal with your family. It was my commander who told me I had to take out everybody in the village. So then they hug, and they're both crying. And it's very powerful, very moving narrative. And then that there's other people in the peace hut who have been affected by this war. And then one by one, they start getting up saying, I want to contact the person who, you know, crippled me. People start wanting to reach out in the same way. So having seen that example of forgiveness, then these other people start coming out and saying, I want to forgive also the person who killed my family. And so it's very, very powerful. And one little vignette at the end of this story is then that, and this is something that happened in the end of this story is 2022, where the man who was the general, he had a sudden health crisis where his blood pressure shot up and he had blood coming out of his nose and he almost died, and he was rushed to the hospital. And then the nurse who admitted him and then saved his life is the man he asked forgiveness from. He was actually working as a volunteer at the hospital. So it's like this good karma then came around and saved his life. So it's a very powerful to think of things like that, and that these types of stories, like the story of Angulimala in the suttas, they can happen in real life, and they do happen. And it's through the power of virtue, the power of forgiveness, that these things can happen, that these things are possible. So to not lose hope, but then to look at ourselves, train ourselves, and through training ourselves, then great things can happen. I will leave it there for this evening.